You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the POD cast, as we so cleverly call it. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the editor-in-chief at Pride of Detroit and your substitute adequate host. You can follow me at Detroit Online. With me, we have our normal co-host. And I say normal in that he's a regular, not that he's a normal person. He is much more than normal than that. He's your rock god. He is Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore POD. How we doing, Ryan?
I'm doing pretty normal. How are you?
Yes, I would say normal. I mean, listen, things are off to a weird start. I'm uncomfortable. I'm in the hosting chair. I don't know what to do. I host our two other podcasts on this network of podcasts that we have, but for some reason, this makes me more uncomfortable than the other two, and
this
I don't know what to
you-
do about it.
This makes you more uncomfortable than being live on the Spotify Green Room app?
Yes. The Spotify Locker Room Green Room app, sponsored by Spotify Music.
And presented podcasts. By Mountain Dew.
Presented by Mountain Dew Baja Blast. We're not just going to have a two-man show today. We want to keep the three-man balance here and to tip the scales so that we're evenly balanced. This is a weird analogy. Mike Payton is here. POD underscore Payton. Mike, how you doing? Welcome back to the podcast.
It's kind of abnormal because I'm here, but really I just came on because I want to know if there's like a promo code that I can get some Baja Blast off that Locker Room Green Room thing. We got a promo code for that?
We're working on it.
All right.
Right in his eyes lit up. I'm not entirely sure why.
Just once we figure out the app, then we'll figure out whether or not we can offer any promo codes. But we have to figure out the app first.
We do. But those are very fun. Might as well throw in a little plug for it at the top here. Those green Spotify Green Room is the new name of the app. It's the same thing as our Locker Room apps. If you've been listening to our live Q&As, we do them every Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. Eastern. But we're not here to do a live Q&A. We are here to podcast. And we have quite a show for you this week. Continuing list cast a little bit later, talking about the top 10 edge defenders in the NFL today. Will any lines make the list? We'll see. But before we do that, we are going to start with a topic as old as time, a topic that I fear as soon as I say the words, half of you are going to skip ahead, which is fine. I'm not going to take it personally, but we're going to tackle this in a way that I don't think we've talked about before. And that is Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson talked again this week with our friends over at Woodward Sports Network. Obviously, he's doing the rounds to plug his marijuana strain and all that sort of stuff. But as it always does, his relationship with the Lions came up. And we got a little bit of new information this time. And that new information being that the man asked for a trade. He said pretty much straight up. After when he was preparing to retire after the 2015 season, he says, "We asked if they would release me or let me go to another team." Quote, "They wouldn't." So this begs an interesting question because we just dealt with a player who requested a trade out of Detroit. And I think it was handled a little bit more clean that time around. And I want to throw this to Mike first because I know you actually have a column running on Pride Detroit on Tuesday about this. So what are your thoughts on I guess just the differences in the situation. Why were the Lions able to so cleanly break from Matthew Stafford, yet they bungled everything with Calvin Johnson? And it's interesting because the fan reaction is quite different to both as well, right? Like, people don't like Calvin Johnson right now, but the way things ended with Matthew Stafford was as clean as possible, I think.
Look, I mean, it's the same exact thing. I don't know why we should dislike Calvin Johnson. I mean, he gave everything to the Lions organization and he wanted to leave. It's the same thing Stafford did. Why are we cool with Stafford and we're not cool with Calvin? But that's beside the point. I think the big major difference here is you got Bob Quinn dealing with the Calvin Johnson situation, and then you've got Brad Holmes dealing with the Matthew Stafford situation. I mean, obviously Brad Holmes, he comes in, he's got an idea for a rebuild. The Matthew Stafford trade really helped him, despite, you know, wanting to keep Stafford at first, like I think any GM would have wanted to. But Bob Quinn, you know, the smartest guy that ever existed, smartest dude in the room. I don't know if this was incompetence. Just maybe they tried to hold Calvin back. They tried to what am I trying to say here? They blocked his trade in an effort to maybe sway him to stay in Detroit.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that burnt them in the end. I don't know if it burnt them more than what they could have gotten if they would have traded him, considering what you look at, you know, Brandon Cooks brought in twice for two different teams, got a first round pick. Amari Cooper got a first round pick for Oakland, or Las Vegas, rather. I mean, it goes on. Stephon Diggs got multiple picks, four draft picks that the Vikings got for Stephon Diggs. I mean, Calvin Johnson is arguably one of the best receivers, top three of all time. He would have netted the Lions an amazing draft haul and probably a player or two. And I just think that they completely screwed up their entire run, their entire future for just to save a couple bucks, it seems.
What are your thoughts, Ryan?
Well, I think what Mike brings up is interesting in the sense that there are some things that are running parallel in both of these situations. You have two guys, you have Bob Quinn and you have Brad Holmes, who were both first-time GMs, just stepping into the chair, just getting into these situations. Now, if we pull things back a little bit further, this was an article that Jeremy shared with us earlier in the day to kind of refresh our memories. But everybody's favorite Carlos came out with an article in November of 2015 of, you know, surrounding the trade deadline in that season. And it was point blank asked to Calvin Johnson, you know, do you want to be here? Do you want to stay in Detroit? And he said, I haven't asked for a trade. Like, I want to be in Detroit. This is where, you know, I love my teammates. This is where I want to be. This is where I want to win. Now, I completely understand how things can change from that 1-7 start that the Lions started with in 2015 to where they ended. I mean, actually, they kind of like turned their season around. It was, you know, one of the most impressive things that I think Jim Caldwell maybe did over the course of his tenure here in Detroit when it comes to, you know, his coaching resume here. But I see so many things parallel between just the situations themselves, but the handlings are completely different. And I don't know if it's, You have to boil it down to Bob Quinn versus Brad Holmes. I don't think that you can even really throw in the whole Rod Wood element to it, because Rod Wood is something that has been consistent since then to now as well. So is it good,
though, to be fair, that was Rod Wood's like second month on the job or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, maybe he's learned. But at the same time, if he's learned since then, what has Bob Quinn really just drawn some kind of line in the sand against Calvin Johnson, like the entire time he was in Detroit from, you know, 2016 through, you know, 2020, he just said like, no, we're not going to do this? Because if it wasn't a Bob Quinn thing, then it had to have been a Rod Wood thing. And if it wasn't a Rod Wood thing, then who the hell is to blame for why the Lions bungled this Calvin Johnson situation? Because at the end of the day, you have one superstar who was able to go out on his terms the way that he wanted to, mutual agreement where, you know, the Lions got what they wanted. Stafford got what he wanted. Calvin Johnson didn't get what he wanted, and he got stuff taken from him too on top of that. So I here's the thing with Calvin Johnson. I still can't blame him for the way that he feels. And I know Dave Burkett kind of accelerated things, and maybe he pushed on the gas a little bit too hard when he said, you know, things were, you know, nearing a resolution between the Lions and Calvin Johnson. But I totally get why Calvin Johnson isn't, you know, back into the fold, as they're saying. So I don't know. I think Bob Quinn was an adequate GM at best. I just don't understand why you want to puff your chest out and draw that proverbial line in the sand when it comes to a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I exactly. And I think that was, there was a conflict from the start. Calvin goes to Bob Quinn. He asks for a trade. Bob says no. They block him in effort to try to get him to stay. And all they really did was just pissed him off. And I think it's the same exact thing that the Packers are about to go through, because they're doing the same thing to Aaron Rodgers. And, well, Aaron Rodgers might be host of Jeopardy soon. Who knows? I mean, like, it's the same type of thing. It's you're just pissing off the player in order to try to maintain some sort of control over the situation. And it just, it's not working out. It didn't work out, and it made things way worse in the end.
Jeremy, is how much is the Patriot way to blame for this? Like, no, in all seriousness.
I don't think I would go that far. Because the one thing we have to bring up is this isn't an apples to apples comparison with Stafford and Calvin Johnson. The teams are in two very different places. They retained Jim Caldwell in 2016. They still thought they could contend, and having Calvin Johnson on their team, it's probably the difference between still being in contention for a playoff spot and not being in contention at all for a playoff spot. So I think the Lions doing whatever they can to keep Calvin Johnson made sense at the time. But if he made it clear, and obviously he followed through on that, that, you know, his other, he wasn't playing in Detroit. He was either retiring or getting cut or getting traded, that then you have to make a move. And maybe that's it. Maybe they're playing the Packers game, and they're stubborn. They thought they would win this game of chicken, and they didn't. And then, I mean, there's also like the financial aspect of it, right? Like, Calvin Johnson had just a few years before it signed a mega extension. That's not going to be an easy contract to move for a guy in his 30s, for a guy who's gone through all the injuries that he has. Certainly, I think there's a team that's eventually going to pay for it. Like Mike said, like, teams shell out for wide receivers, and some of those wide receivers he named before were on big contracts. But it's probably not quite as easy of a transaction as I think the Matthew Stafford one was. That all being said, yeah, I mean, this is stubbornness on the Lions' part. This is another sign that they bungled things from the beginning with Calvin Johnson once Bob Quinn took over and Rod Wood took over, and that whole regime just kind of, you know, just their inexperience showed off from the get-go. And maybe that's another reason to pat Brad Holmes on the back, is that he was put into a very unique situation, very tough situation, and handled it like a pro from the beginning. But to me, this is more about just how badly the Lions bungled things with Calvin Johnson, and whether he has a right to be upset still or not. That's a topic I don't really, I think we've bled that one to death. But I think it is interesting to kind of look back on the decision for the Lions to just drag their feet there and criticize it, because I do think they made a mistake.
I think if you're a Lions fan, you got to feel a little bit better about your situation right now, because the difference here is that you've got Brad Holmes, who, and I don't want to say that he was doing 5D chest or whatever, or chess, not chest, 5D chess. I don't want to say he's the most brilliant man in the world, but like, here's a guy who could clearly see ahead that, all right, Matthew Stafford doesn't want to be here. That sucks, but we can probably use him to get a ton of assets, versus Bob Quinn, who comes from that Patriot way. It's a little bit more like, hey, we're in control of everything. The players don't have the control here. It's all about us. They'll do what we say. And things are just already going smoother with this rebuild. So I think fans should feel optimistic about that, at least.
Two things. One, obviously hindsight's 2020, but you just look at what the Atlanta Falcons were able to do with Julio Jones. I mean, that's a guy who's on a pretty expensive contract too, and he's older than Calvin Johnson. So
and hasn't been playing well.
Yeah, I mean, hasn't been having the kind of seasons that Calvin had towards the end of his, you know, his career. But I think that in and of itself, again, like a new GM. Terry Fontenot came in there from the Saints, was able to make that deal and move things along with Julio Jones just fine. So I truly believe that there's this element of Bob Quinn coming in here and trying to, you know, run the show the way that he had seen it done before in New England. And then the other thing is just kind of a, you know, just kind of a throw it out there question, but like, how much would the narrative change if Brad Holmes ends up accepting the Carolina deal? And maybe that isn't Matthew Stafford's first choice. He obviously wanted to go to the Rams, but does the narrative around Brad Holmes change a little bit? Like, you know, is obviously Matthew Stafford doesn't go out to the media and like voice how disgruntled he is for getting traded to Carolina, because that's the last thing that dude would do. I mean, maybe Kelly would, but sorry, I have to get all my shots in. Yeah, I mean, like, does that change like who Brad Holmes is to the Lions fan base? Like, is everything so rosy? No,
I don't think it changed. I mean, as long as the Lions get a good return, and they would have with Carolina, and like you said, Matthew Stafford would have been fine publicly about it. Maybe we don't get as many love stories about Matthew Stafford and his head coach like we are currently with Sean McVay. God. But yeah, no, I think it would have worked out just fine in terms of like the public perception. But to go back to the Calvin Johnson thing really quick, like I think one of the underrated frustrating parts about this, and Lions fans probably don't care too much about this, is that this means we lost extra years of Calvin Johnson playing football. And that sucks, because I would have loved to see a 10th season from Calvin Johnson. I would have loved to see him, like, I know he made the Hall of Fame anyways, but I would have loved to see him maybe get in the playoffs, maybe win a playoff game, maybe put to bed some other records and not have any sort of conversation about whether his longevity means he wasn't worthy of a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I mean, I know it's been 5-6 years now, like, Calvin Johnson was a hell of a lot of fun to watch. He made Lions football fun to watch, even when there wasn't team success. And knowing that the Lions were mainly responsible for not being able to get a couple more years out of him is depressing. Because guess what? Like, at the time, we're like, no, this isn't like the Barry situation at all. Sorry. It is almost completely, almost identically like the Barry Sanders situation 10 years before it. And now maybe it's a good sign of the times that the Lions have finally broke that cycle with Matthew Stafford. But like, we have come full circle with the Calvin Johnson thing. We know just about everything except for maybe the Lions' point of view of why they didn't trade him, why they didn't cut him at the time. But at this point, it's almost identical to the Barry Sanders situation. And now the Lions, like, we can't fight that narrative as fans that like we ruined the careers of two of the best players, offensive players in NFL history. And that's frustrating. But like I said, maybe they finally broke the cycle with Matthew Stafford.
Well, I think the one other thing, Jeremy, I think you bring up a great point, because here's the thing with Calvin Johnson and why it totally doesn't upset me that he went from saying, no, I want to be a part of this football team, I like playing with the guys that I'm with, this, that, and the other thing, I'm loyal to being a winner here in Detroit in November, and then 2 months later, he's talking about wanting to get a trade. Calvin Johnson saw the writing on the wall. Like, I mean, he probably, ask Calvin Johnson if he liked playing for Jim Caldwell, and I bet that he would say yes. Okay. Sure. With Mayhew coming out, and then with Bob Quinn coming in, I think Calvin Johnson saw the writing on the wall, and he was like, another rebuild? Like, I'm 30. Like, this is a guy who talked about the reason why he retired is because his body was just like incapable of sustaining all of the, you know, brutal blunt force trauma that it was taking to it. Like, I mean, it totally makes sense. I mean, Calvin Johnson is in the right here, and the Lions were totally in the wrong, and they're going to be in the wrong until they get things figured out and situated. And Calvin Johnson is, you know, back in the fold, and he's doing things like team events, and he's, you know, thumping for the Lions.
You know, for as much as we focus on like lying season and GMs lying about stuff and coaches lying about stuff, we always ignore the players lying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe that Calvin Johnson in November of a 1-7 season was like, yeah, I'm going to stay here, I love this town and blah, blah, blah. Look, like, Calvin loves Detroit. I have no doubt about it. There's a reason he keeps coming back to talk to our media, and he lives here. I mean, he doesn't love the Lions right now, but he loves the city of Detroit, and that's cool. But I think that was lip service in November during the trade deadline. I think he knew that he was going to get out at some point in time. He at least wanted to maybe finish the season with his teammates who he had been with for so many years. But yeah, I mean, I just have such a hard time believing pro athletes when they say they want to be here or they want to stay here. I mean, it was the same exact thing with Ndamukong Suh. He did it all year long. And that he hopped the first ship smoking to Miami. And I mean, it just constantly happens. And I don't know.
Do you remember a year ago when like Kelly Stafford posted that Instagram saying like, we ain't going nowhere. Like, yeah, like we love Detroit. Like we want to lift it. Yeah, you're right. Like it's definitely at least, and maybe with Matthew Stafford, it did change with the regime change. Like maybe it changed with Calvin, but yeah, I think you're definitely onto something there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, we should not be expecting these people to tell us the truth.
Yeah. All right. Let me closing up with a quote from Calvin Johnson directly on this topic. He says, you know what? It sucked that they didn't let me go, but they let Matthew go. But hey, you know, it is what it is. I'm not mad at Matthew. I love Matthew. There it is.
I think you can believe that.
You can definitely believe that. Yeah, that seems truthful. That, yeah. All right. And with that, we are going to take a close on the Calvin Johnson era, hopefully for good. Obviously, we'll talk about him a little more when the Pro Football Hall of Fame stuff happens. But hopefully some of the drama is out of the way. When we come back, though, we're going to bring in some drama, some list cast drama, as we list our top 10 edge defenders in the NFL today. So stick with us. We'll be right back on the PODcast.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Welcome back to the POD cast. My name is Jeremy Risman. I'm filling in for Chris Perfett, who's off doing some Fox Sports Net stuff for the radio. Always make sure you tune into him if you're over there on the West Coast, or he's in syndication as well. I don't know how to look him up, but look him up. Anyways, we are back and we are list casting week two of our list cast summer. Last week we did what? Wide receivers?
Yes, sir.
Now we are going to the other side of the ball. Edge defenders. Not edge rushers, edge defenders. We're talking about the guys coming off the edges, whether they're defensive ends, outside linebackers. A lot of their job is getting to the quarterback, but that's not all they do. And just to kind of, if you're new to ListCast, what we do is we get all of the Pride of Detroit staff, or at least who wants to participate, to make their top 10 list. We smush them all together and come together with a collective top 10 list. And this is just edge defenders this year, 2021, in a vacuum. Who are the best guys? Doesn't matter what scheme they're in. Doesn't matter their surrounding cast. Who do we think are the top 10 edge defenders this year? Now, before we get into our list, let's talk about some guys that just barely missed out on the list. Montez Sweat just missed out, and Ryan voted for him, so maybe you can vouch for him in a bit. Chandler Jones missed out. Brian Burns missed out. Bradley Chubb, Bud Dupree, Trey Flowers, and Danielle Hunter. What was interesting about our list is our top nine were solid in terms of consensus. 10 through 17, or whatever it was just like one or two votes here or there. There wasn't a lot of agreement on who slid into that top 10. None of those guys slept in. Let's go to Ryan. Why Montez Sweat, or maybe you want to make an argument for someone else? You also voted for Brian Burns.
Yeah, so I threw Montez Sweat on there because what you mentioned at the very top of this segment is the most important thing, Jeremy, edge defenders. And Montez Sweat is one of those guys who he saw a nice little bump in his pressures from his rookie year to his sophomore season. He had 32 as a rookie, 47 in 2020, but he had an 87 run defense grade last season. Being an edge defender is more than just rushing the passer. So that's something that I would like to see Romeo Okwara make a bump up, and maybe he can make our top 10 list next season.
Mike, is there a guy that didn't make the list that you want to stand for before we jump into our top 10?
Yeah, I'm the guy who voted for Trey Flowers. And here's why. When it came down to it, when I got to 10, I was really struggling with who to put on the list. And I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. And all the guys that we have, like Montez Sweat and Brian Burns, were all options that I thought about. But what I really, what drove me to put Flowers in was I thought about how much does this guy mean to the defense that he plays on. And Trey Flowers is arguably the best defensive player on the entire Detroit Lions team. Can we all agree on that? I think that's probably correct, just because I said it. And I mean, obviously, if you look at his stat sheet, he didn't get home too often. You know, nobody really did in Detroit last year. But he got a ton of pressures. He was great against the run, you know, in certain spots, and he was decent against the pass as well. I look at it like the NBA MVP. Like, it should be the best player who makes their team better. And even though the Lions defense was the worst ever, they were just a little bit better because of Trey Flowers. So that's why I put him on there.
And, you know, I think it's fair. I think a lot goes to Ryan's point where, like, dude is a really, really good run defender. And, you know, he has high pass rush upside. The injuries obviously have kind of hurt him the past couple of years here in Detroit. But you're right. Like, he's the guy with the biggest upside. He's the guy who I think went perpetually underrated, overlooked, perhaps, both in Detroit and maybe during his time in New England. But I need a little more consistency out of him in general, and maybe health for me to have him in my top 10. Who I was surprised didn't make the top 10. He was my number 10. He was also on Hamza's list as well. Is Chandler Jones. I know he's coming off an injury where he only played 5 games and he only had 1 sack. But prior to that, we're talking about 5 straight seasons with at least 10 sacks, including 17 back in 2017, led the league, 19 just 2 years ago, just in 2019. Dude is a beast out there, and he's still, I mean, I know he's now on the other side of 30, but 31, so like not at a point where he's lost everything. And he's done it in multiple places, right? Like that he left New England and actually still played well. That's not something that we see at a lot of guys. So I don't know. I was surprised he wasn't. There are, I think, you know, 10 guys worthy of being on this list, and we have them.
Yeah, and I think once we get started here in our top 10 list, what you're going to see is a pattern of guys who play on teams that have productive defenses established around them. Like, right. you know, Montez Sweat is a guy who I see why other people left him off his list. Cause I mean, think about all the other talent. There's Jonathan Allen, there's Chase Young. There's a ton of dudes on the defensive line, or even, you know, Jeremy, your point, Chandler Jones this season, guess who's got on the other side of him? JJ Watt. Yep. I mean, you might see a significant, you might see Chandler Jones kind of bounce back, you know, be healthy and things like that. So, and with Mike, Trey Flowers, I mean, we keep talking about on every podcast, it seems like, hey, if there's a bright spot about the Lions defense, it's their front line. So, you know, maybe this is the year where Trey Flowers starts living up to that big contract.
Let's move into the guys that actually did make our list. And we're going to start right there in the NFC North. Our number 10 comes from the Green Bay Packers. Za'Darius Smith, one of the quote unquote Smith brothers. I will spoil it and say Preston Smith does not make this list. He was only on three of our lists this year. I was one of them. I actually have Za'Darius Smith as my number seven, so I guess I should be the one that stands for him. But I think he definitely distanced himself as like the best player on that Packers defense, maybe aside of Jair Alexander. But back to back 12 and a half sack seasons, 13 and a half last year before that. And I don't know, like, I feel like the Packers really found a way to use him, right? Like, a lot of it is what you said, Brian. Like, he's in a good defense, in a good fit. He's got a good surrounding cast. But to me, they're using him in a way that Baltimore never figured out how to. And he is living up to it. And still only 28 years old, even though he's, what, six, seven years into his career. I feel like he's just hitting his stride, too. And back-to-back 10 sack seasons is not easy. We're going to see if Romeo Okwara can do it. I'd be surprised if he can. But Za'Darius Smith, I think, has been, in terms of pass rush, and I know pass rush isn't the full, you know, the full scale here, but in terms of pass rush, I think you could argue maybe he's been a top five guy in the past 2 years. Who wants to fight me?
I'll fight you.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike. Fight him.
Okay. I didn't put Za'Darius Smith on my list at all. And the reason is I'm not an analytics guy. I'm really not. But when I look at like PFF, for example, he's not graded much higher than Romeo Okwara, like at all. And I think that you look at Za'Darius Smith's stat line and you see 12 and a half sacks and 50 some odd tackles and you think, well, this guy, he must be a powerhouse. But I think to go back to what Ryan said, it's the perfect example. This is the perfect example of a decent player on a really good defense and being able to capitalize on what the rest of his team can do for him. So, I mean, I'm just not impressed with Za'Darius, especially against the run. Like, he's just not good against the run at all. But he can get home. And it shows up on the stat sheet. And that's what people love to see. But I just don't. Look, he's better than Romeo Okwara, but he's not that much better than Romeo Okwara. I just don't think he should be on this list.
It's fair. The only counterpoint I would make there, and maybe this is just like the Packers kind of quote line that they always give when, you know, you point to their defense not being able to stop the run. They say, you know, that's kind of by design. Like they really don't care. They want to get to the quarterback. They want to disrupt the passing game. And if that allows you to get 6-7 yards on the ground every now and then, like they're cool with that. But you're right. Like 60.5 PFF grade in terms of run defense, that's good for 62nd. So, you know, not nowhere even near average at that point.
Yeah. The only thing I have to add about Za'Darius Smith is, you know, that defensive line, super underrated in terms of their ability to get to the quarterback. You got Kenny Clark in the middle. Yep. You got Preston Smith, as already mentioned. People forget about Rashawn Gary's on that team. Like, and he started to kind of emerge last season. I think you get that perfect storm where you get a good sack season. That's what makes something like Chandler Jones on your list, Jeremy, a little bit more impressive for a guy who's been able to do it consistently that many seasons. Cause I think sacks can be one of those numbers that if you are just a, you know, if you're an above average player on a really good defensive line, maybe you luck yourself into 10 or 11. And then maybe if you go away or that talent goes away, you see your numbers regress. But I'm fine with Za'Darius Smith being 10. That's okay.
All right. Now we get into our top nine, which, as I said, we're far and away more agreed upon than anyone below that. Our number eight, I'm going to say, because we actually have a tie between 8 and 9. So we'll call it number 9, and we'll just start with DeMarcus Lawrence. And I want to jump right back to you, Ryan, because you have DeMarcus Lawrence as your number 4.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, DeMarcus Lawrence is, he's the real deal, man. I think that he's, I don't know if it's because of his personality and he plays for the Dallas Cowboys, but like you, and maybe just the fact that the focus is always on Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, but like DeMarcus Lawrence is so overlooked, so underappreciated. Like, pass rush is always going to be the thing that everybody jumps to with edge defenders. And he's been doing that. And then, you know, he's been putting up sacks, you know, sack numbers each year that are very commendable. But again, it's edge defender. Last year, he had a 90.1 run defense grade over the last or he had a run defense grade of 90.1 over the last four seasons, which makes him just one of seven players of that position to clear 90. And, you know, it's a guy who can do it all. So that's why I'm so high on DeMarcus Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at stats, you tend to get fooled by DeMarcus Lawrence and think maybe he's not that good of a player. He hasn't had more than 10 sacks since 2018, 5 sacks in 2019, 6.5 last year. But if you look at kind of those pressure stats, you know, the disruption stats that aren't necessarily the same as sack stats, you know, 8th in PFF pass rush grade, 10th in ESPN's pass rush win rate with 21% there. Yeah. Pressures, he's still at 47, which 24th, you know, not horrible, not great. But and then you throw, like you said, a top tier run defense. That's just a really well-rounded player who can really a guy that you don't need to ever take off the field, right? Like a lot of these guys might be specialists in terms of pass rush. They're going to be your third down guys, maybe early down guys. Most of these guys are probably 2 to 3 down guys. But DeMarcus Lawrence is, I mean, definitely a dude that you can keep on there forever and still on the right side of 30 as well. All right, let's move.
Ahead. I think he's so overlooked that I overlooked him and didn't put him on my list. Like, I think that I should have. Kind of looking back on it now, like, yeah, he's so quiet, you know. But he's just a guy that goes out and gets the job done.
Yeah, he had that one 14.5 sack season, and we're all just like, this guy's going to consistently be there in the sack numbers, and he just isn't. But I do think the productivity is still there, and I think 9's a good actually spot for him. I think that may have been right around where I had him. So also 8th, I should say, because like I said, there is a tie between the 8th, is Shaq Barrett at number 8. Who wants to talk about Shaq Barrett first?
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I mean, you got to love the guy. You know, he helped the Bucks win the Super Bowl. He was big in that game, too. I mean, he had a lot of he was in Pat Mahomes' face all day. This dude, you know, he's badass, man. I mean, I honestly don't know enough about him other than, you know, sort of some of the stuff that he's done in the Super Bowl. And I'm sort of scrambling behind here. But I mean, I have the same issues with him that I have with Za'Darius Smith, though. Like, he's not very good against the run. But, you know, he's a fine player. I wish I knew more about him so I could look smarter.
Yeah, with Shaq Barrett, I think it was an interesting test case of, like, he is really kind of just average in Denver. He goes to Tampa Bay in 2019, and then he gets 20 sacks. And everybody's like, holy crap, like, nobody saw this coming. Which really impressive. I mean, 20 sacks, 18 hits, 44, you know, hurries total. But last year, I mean, he didn't get 20 sacks. He got 12. And I imagine that has something to do with with, you know, opposing offenses being like, all right, we need a scheme for this guy because he's getting to the quarterback a little bit too easily. 12 sacks, but still had 74 hurries. Like, I mean, Shaq Barrett was still, he was getting after it. And, you know, kind of just an average run defender, as Mike mentioned, but the reason why he made it on my list, and I had him, I believe, yeah, I had him at number 8, which we have him slotted, but like, I just couldn't keep him off the list because of how good he is as a pass rusher.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to forget the 20 sack season that was just last year. And then you're right, like, the sack numbers weren't as good this year. I think officially there was only 8, but PFF might have credited him with more because they do that. But in terms of pressures, whether you want to call it hurries, pressures, whatever, PFF's pressure stat, first, 77. No one had more than him. That's all you need to say. Like, this guy needs to be in your top 10. If he's literally first in pressures. And like even his run defense grade, 66.6, which is 36, that's about average. So I'll take someone that can give you average run defense with elite pass rush. Like that's a top tier player. That's a guy you need on your team. And that's a guy that I think was instrumental in the Bucks getting a Super Bowl ring over there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
All right, moving along here. Number 7, Cameron Jordan. Cameron Jordan. Let's go to you, Ryan. What do you got to say about Cameron Jordan? Where was he on your list?
Well, Cameron Jordan, I believe I had him a little bit higher. Let me double check here. Yeah, I had him at number 6. Yeah, yep. So just slightly higher. But, you know, it's weird because I didn't have Chandler Jones on my list, but like I just want to give so much credit to dudes who have been doing it for so long because of that, you know, how finicky these stats can be sometimes from year to year when it comes to, you know, being consistently good. As far as guys on this list, like Cameron Jordan, year in, year out, has just been an absolute stud, like for the past 7 seasons. I mean, since 2015, no less than an 82 grade from PFF over the course of that, you know, 10 sack season, 15 sack season, 13 sack season, 17 sacks. I mean, the guy just is consistently up there with, you know, the best edge defenders. And again, another guy who he's no, you know, he's not slacking in the run defense department either. So I big Cameron Jordan, the guy.
Yeah, same here. I mean, the dude is consistent constantly. I mean, and he's going to be like, to me, he's going to be like Calais Campbell. Like, he's just going to be a guy that no matter how old he gets, he's just still going to be good and he's still going to be reliable. Obviously, his sack total is down a little bit from what it was last year. I think he had 15 last year. He only had like 7 or 8 this year. But I mean, he's a dude that anytime New Orleans comes in town, like you worry about him. Like this is the guy that you got to be afraid of that's going to come after your quarterback and he's good against the run too. I mean, he's just the guy. He's a guy I would love to have in Detroit.
Yeah, Cam didn't make my list, but you know, you both make great arguments. I mean, the dude was 4th in run defense last year, so he's got that veteran kind of well-roundedness to him. I just think maybe that's where his career trajectory is headed now. Like, I don't know if he's about to turn 32. He might not have the quickness and the athleticism to really pull off some of the pass rush moves that allowed him to have 4 or 5 10 sack seasons in his career. As you mentioned, he dropped to 7.5 last year. The efficiency is still there. You know, his pass rush grade is 19th. So it's not like he's a slouch in that department. I just think we're starting to see a little bit of a slide there into maybe being more of a savvy veteran kind of guy who relies more on his smarts than his athleticism, and maybe that's where you see a better run defense. That's why you see his run defense grade kind of going up while maybe his pass rushing skills are going down. So he's probably just off my list, but I think, you know, I'm not mad about him being 7th on our list.
The one other stat I want to bring to you about Cameron Jordan that shows just how reliable he's been, he is 2nd. Or he's 3rd, trailing only Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald in total pressure since 2015 with 428.
He has that consistency that Mike said. Like that dude has put together a heck of a resume, and I wouldn't take that away from him. All right, let's close out our bottom 5 here, or I guess bottom 5 of a top 10. Don't want to call him bottom 5 guys. Nick Bosa is your number 6. And Ryan, I feel like I have to go to you here. Nick Bosa was not on your list.
Yeah, Nick Bosa was not on my list because I didn't see him last year.
Okay.
Played 2 games, and I understand that he had an incredible rookie season. He was one of the reasons why the 49ers had such a awesome defense alongside Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. Sorry, always blanking on his name. He went to Indianapolis, Ryan. Get it straight. I feel like Chris Farley right now interviewing Paul McCartney. Such an idiot. But no, I'm not an idiot for not having Nick Bosa on my list. I think that let me just see something. Let me see something more. I get it. The rookie season, really tough blow. I think he tore his ACL like 2nd game into the season. Let me just see it again. And I think that's kind of the problem that his brother had for a while too, you know? So okay. That's where I'm at with Nick Bosa.
You're just in a prove it mode at this point.
Yeah, like he's good. I mean, like I don't feel like I'm going to look like an idiot for not having him in my top 10 if he goes and has like 18 sacks this season. Like, because I'll just put him on my I'll put him on my list next year and then I'll be fine.
But this is supposed to project. We're projecting for 2021, not.
No.
Mike, call him an idiot.
The rules.
I think that Ryan's doing the same thing that I did with Todd Gurley.
Absolutely not. That's such bullshit.
No, I have some of the same concerns that Ryan does. He's coming off a torn ACL. How much is that going to affect how he plays? But still, like, the guy is super young. He doesn't have a whole lot of rust on him. You know, obviously he sat out his last year in college and everything. And I don't know, man. I think he's going to bounce right back, but I guess we'll see. You know, Todd Gurley didn't really bounce back.
The man had 102 pressures his rookie season. 102 pressures his rookie season. No one this year had more than 77. Bro,
he's bloody missed a whole year of football.
I'm not sure if that's right. I think it's 80 pressures
for Nick Bosa. What are you looking at? PFF?
Yeah,
I see 102. Whatever. Either way, even if it is
80, 80 is a lot. Yeah,
than anyone had this year. Anyone.
All right, that was 2019.
This is a 5 guy. The fact
what did he do last year?
Is politically based. You guys are being leftist.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh my God, it's Chris. Everybody, Chris here.
Nick Bosa is going to blow things up. And he might have to because, you know, that 49ers defense isn't quite what it used to be. And you know, they lost the best head coaching candidate in this year's cycle. So...
Do you want to make a little friendly bet on week one of the NFL season?
Oh God, no, probably not.
Yes, no, do it.
I want to put a bet that would go against a good Lions performance.
Let's bet you have to eat a hot dog with mustard. If Nick Bosa doesn't get more than 3 pressures against the Detroit Lions.
No, I'm not. It's the best offensive line in the league. Why would I bet that?
That's right. Oh, you stole my joke.
All right, with that, we are going to take a break. When we come back, top 5 edge defenders that for some reason will not include Nick Bosa, but it might include his brother. Spoiler alert. So stick with us. We'll be right back on the PUD cast.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And we are back on the POD cast, counting down your top 10 edge defenders for the 2021 season. It's still this cast season, baby. Let's get back into it. If you need a quick refresher on who our bottom 5 of the top 10 were, number 6, Nick Bosa. Number 7, Cameron Jordan. Number 8, Shaq Barrett. Number 9, DeMarcus Lawrence. Number 10, Za'Darius Smith. And now it's time to break into our top 5 second year player. Splashed onto the scene with 7.5 sacks last season, but looked pretty darn good doing it. The guy that we all wanted to be the Detroit Lions' new premier defender, Chase Young, is our number 5. Mike, talk to us about Chase Young.
He's the future of the position. I mean, like, flat out. You know, the guy, he's an absolute monster. And yes, he broke a lot of people's hearts were broken when the Washington football team took him second overall last year. But this guy, I think, is a guy that we're going to be talking about in that number one, number two spot as early as like next year. Like I foresee, you know, I think there's going to be a big boom from this guy this year. Could use a little bit of work in the pass rush area, surprisingly. He didn't grade out as well as I thought he would. Good against the run. I mean, 76 against the against the pass is not like the worst thing in the world. But like, I think once this guy gets to his peak, whenever that is, he is going to be like the most scariest defender in the league.
I'm all in on Chase Young, and because he's one of those guys who does it all, and he was a rookie last season. You know, in all things considered, I mean, how many rookies really struggled over the course of 2020? I mean, you had to look no further than Detroit to see, you know, the strugglings that come with just being a rookie in the NFL. And then on top of that, going through the season with the pandemic and everything, there are a lot of things stacked against Chase Young, a lot of expectations because of, you know, the high praise and all the accolades that he earned while playing at Ohio State. But an 87 overall grade, 82.8 in run defense. He has room to improve as a pass rusher on by PFF's metrics. And that's the thing that's scary, is that because, as Mike says, like, the guy is going to put it all together and he's the future of the position. Chase Young might catapult into the top three by the time we do the list next year.
Yeah, I don't think I would be surprised. I had him at 8 just because I need a little more prove it out of him. You know, I'm not doubting the man at all. And he's definitely going to be a top 10 guy. But yeah, like Mike said, I think it was actually a little bit surprising how modest his season was in terms of pass rush. 7.5 sacks, 76.5 PFF grade, which is 19th. But he actually, in terms of pass rush win rate, he did come in the top 10. He was 7th. So the, you know, depending on what metric you use, you know, he certainly wasn't a slouch in the pass rushing game. But if you're expecting a guy to like jump in and immediately be an elite guy, which, you know, we sometimes see with edge defenders. I mean, the Bosa brothers are you know, still very young and made an impact right away. And it's just one of those positions that you can do it. But like, he's right there. Like, he's right there in that conversation. And I just want to see him do it for another year, essentially. That's really the only reason why he's not in my personal top five. But I do think he'll eventually get there. If not this year, then in the very near future.
Oh, yeah.
So let's sure. Move to that number four position. Move to another aforementioned Bosa brother. And Joey Bosa comes in at number four. And the interesting thing about our list, and I can't imagine anyone remembers our list from last year, our top four remained the exact same as it did last year. But Ryan, tell us what you like about Joey Bosa.
Well, so this is the thing that his brother has to overcome, right? Is that early on, you know, Joey struggled a little bit with injuries. You know, his 2018 season, he missed some time, but bounced back in 2019 with 16 games. Last year, only played in 12. So it's about that thing of consistency, and the best ability is what everybody availability. Thank you. Okay. So now that we've got that out of the way, I think Bosa has proven that, like, he's going to be more healthy than not. And you have a guy who is, I think he's better than his brother personally. Yeah. And I think that Nick has a lot of catching up to do. Joey is just, by PFF's metric, here's the stat for him: the only active edge rusher with a pass rush win rate higher than 20% since 2016. And it's sitting at 22% since entering the league. Like, the guy has all the tools. When he starts playing more consistently, the numbers are going to start being mind-boggling.
And so, you know, you had him, what, 7th on your list or something like that? And I imagine that's simply just injury related, right?
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I look at Joey Bosa and yeah, injury is literally the only concern. Otherwise, we're talking about top two guy, I think. Like, this is, you look across the board, you look at whatever statistical website you want to look at for pass rushing stats. PFF grade, he was 3rd last year. Pass rush grade, 90.5, 2nd in the NFL. ESPN's pass rush win rate, he was 5th. Pressures, 5th. Run defense, 5th. Or no, 1st, I'm sorry. Wait, no, 5th. PFF's pass rush productivity stat, which goes on a per down basis, 1st. The guy is top 5 across the board in just about any way you look at it. He just needs to stay on the field. And I think that's probably what has him on the outside of the top three, at least in my opinion, because he could arguably be number one if he played a full 16 game season every year. I don't know if there would be an argument not to have this guy in the top two and not two.
I got to say, I'm impressed by his the way he's sort of gotten better at the run defense. I'm just looking at his grades here from over his career, and he's gotten better every single year. He went from 63.5 to 69.2, 73.1, and now 83.1. I mean, I think that's just proof that this guy is just going to keep getting better and better, and he's doing the less sexy thing, which is stopping the run. I mean, everybody wants to look at the pass rushing ability and stuff, but this guy is doing both things. And I'm with you, Jeremy and Ryan. If he can stay healthy, which he has shown that he has a really hard time doing, he could be the number one guy.
All right, let's move into our top three. Starting at tied for second, because we got another tie on our list. Let's start with Khalil Mack is one of our top two guys. Ryan, you had Khalil Mack first, so I'm going to give the floor to you. Why is Khalil Mack to you the best edge defender in the league right now?
Well, you heard me mention earlier that there's only a couple people ahead of Cameron Jordan when it comes to pressure since 2015. One of those guys is Aaron Donald. He's not an edge rusher or an edge defender. The other guy is Khalil Mack, and he is an edge defender. And you talk about a guy who is just as good as a pass rusher. And when I say just as good, I mean an all-pro pass rusher. He is an all-pro run defender. I mean, this guy does absolutely everything. Last season, he was first amongst edge defenders with a 92 run defense grade and a 90.8 pass rush grade. So, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. Like, and he's done it so consistently at such a high level for so long. Like, I mean, there's been 2 years, according to PFF, his rookie season and his second season in Chicago, where he didn't have an overall grade of below 90. Like,
pretty crazy.
Really good. Really, really good. The best, I would say, in the NFL.
Yeah. And just to give an idea of how good a 90 grade is, there were only three edge defenders last year who had a 90 or better. And Khalil Mack was the one, number one PFF graded edge defender with a 92.3 grade. But I would argue, can we really put someone who got stonewalled by Matt Nelson as your number one edge defender?
Slings and arrows, Jeremy. Slings and arrows.
No.
I just watched my entire argument crumble before my eyes.
I obviously say that in jest. He was my number two, I believe. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can really add anything that you didn't say, other than I guess my argument against him, my real argument against him, was just is again age, and it's probably not fair because he's still only 30. But the consistency thing is really what's important to me, and yeah, guys had at least 8.5 sacks for six straight seasons, and like you said, he brings it in the run defense as well. He's just a guy you never take off the field. He's a guy you center your defense around. And a guy that I will be pleased as pie as soon as he gets the hell out of the division.
I've got nothing to add. You guys nailed it.
Hey, well, then let's move to the man who is tied with him at second on our list. And that man is Myles Garrett. I'll let you have first word on this one, Mike. Tell us where you had Myles Garrett and what you like or dislike about his game.
I had Myles Garrett at two, and it's mostly because I put him above Khalil Mack. I had him at three because of the age. Myles is only 25 years old, but also because he is a physical specimen. Like, my God, like, I know that you hate wrestling, Jeremy, but Ryan, if Vince McMahon could get his hands on this guy, right? Like, he would be all about it. Like, the dude is just he's a jacked monster. I mean, and he scares the hell out of me. And now he's going to have Jadeveon Clowney along with him. It's going to be really interesting to see what they can do. I think with the help that Clowney's going to bring, you're going to see an even better Myles Garrett, which who knows how much better he can get. Obviously, struggles against the run, though, a little bit, which is kind of a concern, I guess. He only scored a 76 on PFF against the run, which is, you know, a lot lower than what Khalil got, which was in the 90s. But I just think that you give this guy a little bit more time to grow. You build the defense up around him as they are doing, and he's going to continue to show out. Either that, or he's going to hit you with your helmet. One of those two things.
To your point, like 9.99 RAS, definitely a physical specimen of which there really aren't that many. To me, it was obvious from his first snap that he was going to be something special. And, three straight 10-plus sack seasons, despite the fact that he missed two games last year and six the year before it. I'm assuming that's going to be Ryan's big drawback on Myles Garrett, whom he had fifth on his list. Is just the injury concerns. Is that another thing?
Injuries a little bit more so, just that complete player that Mike kind of alluded to. Just kind of an average run defender. And sure. It's not one of those things where it was like just 1 year. It was like a couple, like the past couple of seasons, in part due to the injuries, I think, as well. So maybe those are kind of taking a toll, because his one fully healthy season, he did score above an 80 as a run defender. So, there's no arguing that Myles Garrett's a top five, like, edge defender, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah, to me, I just, like, as soon as Cleveland becomes even a tad more relevant, I know they just made the playoffs for the first time and all that stuff, I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like for some reason Myles Garrett is still getting slightly overlooked, and that's probably not true at all. He's a two-time Pro Bowler in 4 years, but I don't know. I just feel like he sometimes can be outside of the conversation of the Bosas and the Khalil Macks and our number one edge defender of 2021, TJ Watt, for the second year in a row, is our number one edge defender. Ryan, let's go back to you. Talk to me about TJ Watt.
Yeah, so TJ Watt is really good. Hashtag analysis, right? Like, TJ Watt is, I think, he's every bit the player that Khalil Mack is. Like, I think that they are both, you know, elite against the run, but TJ Watt, I mean, you can't really argue with the stats. I mean, like, if you're talking about a guy who's a pass rusher, leads all edge defenders in sacks and quarterback hits since 2019, and just short of Shaquille Barrett, who had an insane amount of pressures. But he's legitimately like one of the top three edge defenders in the NFL. And like, he's not three. So I think it's him and Khalil Mack. I think that they're one and two. They're almost interchangeable to me. TJ Watt is just so productive, right? Like, the productivity is what just smacks you in the face when you think about TJ Watt.
Yeah, no question. 13 sacks in 2018, 14 and a half in 2019, 15 in 2020. That's ridiculous. That is a 3 year stretch that is only matched by some of the best to ever do it. And you look at just last season. Led the league in sacks, second in PFF grade among edge defenders, third in pass rush, second in run defense. So he's balanced. Second in overall pressures, according to PFF. First in ESPN's pass rush win rate, and then PFF's pass rush productivity stat, second. So, like, yeah, you're right. Like, there's no arguing that he is outside of the top three, and he's probably not three. And to me, he's not two either. I think he's the clear number one, and it's... You know what's frustrating is he went to the Steelers, because the Steelers always have good defenders. And he fell what was that, like 22, 23 or 24 or something in the draft? 30. He was 30 in the draft. Yeah. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? How does he get there when everyone was just like, he's a Watt, he's going to be good. Came from Wisconsin. They know what they're doing sometimes. It's ridiculous.
I'm just amazed. I mean, the guy, he just took to it like a fish and takes to water. Like, he was just incredible from the jump. Like, this is what the Bosas wish that they could be. Like, you know, yeah, they have good seasons to start off, but like, they don't step to that next level. TJ Watt stepped to that next level, and he's only 26 years old. And he should have been Defensive Player of the Year this past season, by the way. Like, I mean, that, you know, I don't like Aaron Donald, no disrespect, but like TJ Watt had an incredible season, and he's going to continue to have incredible seasons. Like, I think that this guy's a Hall of Famer. Like, I'm just going to go ahead and declare it right here and now. I think that TJ Watt is TJ and JJ are both Hall of Famers.
JJ, no question. TJ's got some work to do, but he's certainly well on his way.
And there's another Watt too, but like I don't know who he is.
there doesn't surprise me that they're a breeding bunch over there. I don't know what that means. Anyways, let me recap our edge defenders list. Starting at the bottom, 10, Za'Darius Smith, 9, DeMarcus Lawrence, 8, Shaq Barrett, 7, Cameron Jordan, 6, Nick Bosa, 5, Chase Young, 4, Joey Bosa. Tied for second is Myles Garrett and Khalil Mack. And our number one edge defender for the second year in a row is TJ Watt. And that is our list cast. We did it, guys.
Yeah, we did it. Two down.
Two down. Four more to go. Next week, running backs. That's going to be an interesting one. I'm very excited to see who we have at running backs, because that like edge defenders, 8 of the 10 that we had on last year's list stayed on the list. Running backs is a much more volatile position, so I have to imagine we'll see some movement. And so make sure you're with us next time for that. We'll be live here on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit, Monday night, probably around 6 p.m., but it might change a little bit, so make sure you're following us on Twitter for announcements for that. For Mike, for Ryan, I'm Jeremy. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next week. It's chaos. Be kind.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.